This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Senior defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
After 468 days since Operation Al-Aqsa flood, the mass slaughter of more than 46,000 residents of Gaza, the displacement of over 2 million Palestinians, and the destruction of most vital medical, educational, and religious infrastructure in Gaza, a ceasefire agreement between the Israeli regime and Hamas finally reached its final stage. The release of the terms of this three-step agreement in various regional and international media has sparked a wave of joy in the Islamic world and among supporters of Palestine, alongside a sense of frustration and anger among the residents of the occupied territories. Israeli newspapers have reported on the imposition of a bad agreement on Israel by Trump, hoping to alleviate the embarrassment of this defeat. The newspaper Jerusalem Post has claimed that Benjamin Netanyahu promised his ministers that after the exchange of prisoners, war in this Palestinian strip would resume in order to quell the Zionists' anger. The objectives that the Israeli regime declared at the beginning of the war have remained elusive, just like a mirage. Now Israel has signed a ceasefire agreement with Hamas, the group that the regime intended to continue fighting against until its complete destruction. Today, the world has understood that the patience of the people of Gaza and the steadfastness of the Palestinian resistance have forced the Israeli regime to retreat. History will record that one day a group of Zionists committing the most heinous crimes killed thousands of women and children, and in the end, they were defeated. This is a brief message from the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, following the announcement of the ceasefire in Gaza. We asked the Iranian analyst, Mr. Saadullah Zarei, about the winner of the war.
به نظر من بزرگترین پیروز این میدان مردم هستند که
In my opinion, the biggest winner in this war is the people who not only in Gaza but also in the region and across the world stood up against Israel's brutal aggression. Thus, after the acceptance of the ceasefire, the joy was not limited to Gaza but swept across the region and the world.
In Iran, reactions to the ceasefire in Gaza were filled with pride in the resistance axis. Many people took to social media to express solidarity with the people of Gaza, but the virtual space seemed too small for the enthusiasm and excitement felt by the people over this event. Consequently, gatherings were held on Thursday night in several squares across Iran to celebrate with the people of Gaza. On Friday, following the Friday prayers, while the sermons in mosques nationwide discussed the reasons for this victory, worshippers took to the streets to march and celebrate the defeat of Israel and the imposition of the ceasefire resistance style. In all cities of Iran, especially in provincial capitals, marches were held with banners and slogans conveying support for Palestine and condemning the crimes of the Israeli regime, while flags of Palestine were carried to once again showcase the solidarity of the Iranians with the Palestinian nation. Dr. Zari told us also about the losers of the war. He believed loser number one was not Israel, but Western civilization.
The biggest loser in this war, in my view, is Western civilization, which for the past 200 years has claimed to defend humanity, democracy, and the rights of people, children, women, minorities, and religions, among others. However, during the genocide of the people of Gaza, these very Western countries aided Israel by sending over 120,000 tons of weaponry to destroy infrastructure and conduct widespread massacres, including the killing of over 18,000 children and over 8,000 women. Everything that the West had previously promoted as lessons for humanity has been sacrificed in this war to defend the Israeli criminals. Therefore, I believe the first loser in this war is the civilization of the West.
Just hours after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appeared before the media cameras and announced a great war in Gaza aimed at changing the military, political, and geopolitical situation in the region. The destruction of Hamas and freedom of war prisoners were Netanyahu's two main promises that were never realized. It seems that the officials of the Israeli regime are inclined to experience a bitter defeat from the people of Gaza every 20 years. This occurrence with a temporary ceasefire agreement implemented on Sunday mirrors what happened 20 years ago in August 2005. Back then, the Israelis unilaterally evacuated 21 Israeli settlements in the Gaza Strip, removing both the settlers and the army from inside Gaza. This unilateral withdrawal operation was proposed in 2003 by then the Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, whose crimes and bloodshed failed to break the resilience of the people in Gaza. Now, after 20 years, the Israelis are once again following the same path they took two decades ago. Since the day Israel attacked the Gaza Strip in October 2023, regional experts have warned that Gaza is a quagmire that Israel will find it hard to escape. Hanif Ghaffouri, an Iranian expert in international affairs based in Tehran.
Netanyahu, at the beginning of the Gaza war, specifically after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, set three main objectives regarding Gaza. First, the complete destruction of Hamas. Second, the total occupation of the Gaza Strip. And third, the release of all Israeli captives of war without signing a ceasefire agreement with Hamas and without granting any concessions to the group. However, after 16 months, he signed an agreement that recognized Hamas as a party involved. This indicates that Hamas has not been destroyed. On the other hand, given the agreements regarding the two crucial corridors of Netzarim and Philadelphia, and the commitment made by the Zionists for a gradual withdrawal from these two routes, it is clear that a complete occupation of Gaza has not been achieved, and the freedom of prisoners without a ceasefire agreement is also evidently unattainable. Thus, once again, the main loser in this field is Israel.
The meetings between Hamas and the Israeli regime, mediated by Qatar, Egypt, and the United States, consistently featured Hamas's conditions for the ceasefire, which have remained unchanged since day one, while it was Israel that softened its initial hardline stance and capitulated to the demands of the Palestinian resistance group. Mr. Zarei said Iran played a key role in the conclusion of the ceasefire, although it kept a low profile.
Interestingly, Iran plays a significant role in these scenarios without the need for an Iranian diplomat to be visibly present. The Palestinian side expresses gratitude. For what? They're thanking Iran for the practical support being provided. In other words, we control and monitor the path of agreements without needing to be physically present in Doha. We advise where there are weaknesses, propose solutions, and issue warnings where there may be harm. Thus, even without being in Doha, Iran has been the most active player in the ceasefire project there. This is a very important issue, and due to its security nature, can be difficult to explain clearly and openly.
The 21st century will witness the decline of American imperialism, a phenomenon we are currently observing. Elements of neo-fascism have surfaced, bolstered by the American support. We are on the verge of witnessing a strategic triumph for Latin America against imperialism. It is evident that the dominance and the hegemony of the United States are waning, giving rise to a new paradigm of multilateralism, multipolarity, and an emerging world order. We firmly believe that nations will chart their own paths toward freedom.
Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
But the fundamental question is, what role did Iran, as the leader of the resistance axis, play from the beginning of the war on Gaza? What behaviors did it exhibit? And how was it able to assist the people of Gaza while also preventing as much as possible the escalation of conflict in the region? We also talked with Mr. Khajoui, an Iranian expert in West Asia studies. He said Iran has been a supporter of resistance groups out of humanitarian concerns, not their master.
When the October 7th operation took place, Iranian senior officials explicitly stated that they were not aware of this operation, and all signs and evidence indicated that not only Iranian officials, but also other resistance groups, including Hezbollah in Lebanon, and even the political branch of Hamas, were not informed about this operation. However, Iranian officials have always declared their support for the Palestinian people's struggle for their rights. And the reality is that Iran has been a supporter of resistance groups over the decades. Iranian officials have never denied the issue of arming Palestinian groups, arguing that its support for the Palestinian nation as a whole against the occupation of the Israeli regime. The point is this. Iran did not create these resistance groups, but it has supported it as much as possible.
With the onset of Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza, the Islamic Republic of Iran utilized diplomacy through multiple meetings with the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and BRICS to draw further attention to the plight of people in Gaza and rally as much support as possible for them.
Over the past 15 months, Iran has effectively been at the forefront of diplomatic efforts to resolve the recent war. From the very first day following the war in Gaza, Iran raised the topic of a ceasefire as a diplomatic necessity and emphasized it. The Islamic Republic proposed holding meetings, including a special session of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation that took place in Saudi Arabia, where a political solution for the Gaza crisis was proposed. So, in the past 15 months, we have witnessed repeated efforts by Iranian officials for a ceasefire in Gaza.
While officials in Tel Aviv were trying to exploit the war in Gaza to solidify their position and expand their influence, Iran took steps to counter this plan by improving relations with Arab countries. Martyr Dr. Hossein Amir Abdollahian, then Iranian foreign minister, prioritized consultations with Islamic leaders for achieving a ceasefire during his visit to Saudi Arabia within the framework of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Meanwhile, martyr Ayatollah Sayyid Ibrahim Ramisi, then the president of Iran, attended an emergency summit of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation at the invitation of the Saudi Crown Prince following the outbreak of the war in Gaza, marking the first high-level bilateral meeting between the two countries in a decade. Contrary to the initial expectations of many analysts, Operation Al-Aqsa Flood did not lead to an escalation of regional conflict. Interestingly, relations between Iran and Arab countries, especially Saudi Arabia, became even closer. The primary reason for this was Tehran's well-thought policies in addressing what was happening in Gaza, calling on the entire Muslim world to take action. Meanwhile, we met Mr. Hamidreza Ghulamzadeh, a political analyst, in his office.
The same continued after the change of the administration in Iran. Foreign Minister Araghchi and President Pezeshkian, they also supported the same procedure, and we have seen that Mr. Araghchi visited Lebanon, Syria, and different countries and negotiated with the officials in those countries. President Pezeshkian had a very good speech from the day one in his inauguration speech, and also in the UN General Assembly and many different occasions. He has always supported and expressed support for the Palestinians. These talks with other players and showing the support for the Palestinians and trying to pave the ground for international organizations and international courts to follow the rules and follow the international legislation in order to condemn the brutalities and atrocities of the Zionist regime have been actually the outcome of the, what the diplomatically Iranian government has sought for the past few months.
Perhaps for the first time in all these years, the Saudis aligned with Iran, issuing a remarkably explicit statement in last February. The Saudi kingdom has communicated its firm stance to the U.S. government that until a sovereign Palestinian state is recognized within the borders of 1967 with East al-Quds as its capital, and until Israel's aggression against Gaza ceases and all occupying forces withdraw from Gaza, no diplomatic relations will be established with Israel.
It is very important to note that Hamas, which launched its operation on October 7, 2023, was not a government but a resistance group that was under sanctions and was labeled, though falsely, as a terrorist organization. Hamas took a legitimate action to assert its rights, but in the international arena, a government was needed to firmly endorse this move. If there had been no government to validate Hamas's operation, Israel and its supporters would have framed it as a terrorist act and rallied the global community against the Palestinian resistance. However, when a legitimate government with a flag and a seat at the United Nations firmly endorses Operation Al-Aqsa Flood and states that it fully supports this movement by the Palestinians, the international atmosphere can no longer condemn Hamas's actions as terrorist activities as it could once do. Now imagine if that government were as powerful as the Iranian government, which has supporters in the region and across the world, maintaining close ties with powers like Russia and China. Thus, from this perspective, Iran's role is very significant. Furthermore, Iran has provided assistance to the Palestinians in every way possible since the start of the war. Iran stood alongside the Palestinians and, much like a spokesperson for them, defended their cause daily. The leadership of Iran, particularly the leader of the Islamic Revolution, has consistently and explicitly supported the Palestinian cause. It is rare to find an occasion over these past 16 months where he has not spoken in defense of Gaza and Palestine during his speeches.
Iran defined this war as confined to the geography of Gaza and connected it to the historical anger of the Palestinians towards the expansionist actions of the Israeli regime, so deliberately refrained from entering the Gazan theater directly. In fact, the leader of the Islamic Revolution's guidance in reducing tensions and keeping the war limited to the Gaza crisis cannot be denied. Mr. Ghulamzadeh said while Iran is against the occupation regime of Israel, it doesn't want its destruction through direct military confrontation, but through showing the true ugly face of the regime.
The whole world needs to know that how brutal they are and how against humanity they are. So these are the outcomes of these procedures that we have been witnessing for more than a year now. And they will lead to a future in which the whole world would agree upon the fact that they need to go. And they would agree upon the fact that they have occupied the land, that it does not belong to them. And they are not an entity who could live with the others. So many people across the world, many people who even didn't even know anything about Palestine in the past, are now really very familiar with the situation and now support the Palestinians and support the Palestinian cause and will support the removal of the Zionist regime in the future. So that's the mindset of the resistance network, that it takes time, and more important than removal of the regime by force is removal of the regime by hearts and minds, in the hearts of and minds of the people. And that is the process that is being taken now with them.
Even Iran's behavior following the Israeli attack on its embassy in Damascus and the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran was highly calculated. Operation True Promise 1 and 2, which were essentially Tehran's response to Israel's provocations against Iran, were aimed solely at limiting the scope of the war rather than escalating it. In January 2024, late President Raisi surprised regional diplomats with another move. A trip to Ankara and discussions with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. At the end of this visit, which was another sign of his country's changing role in the region, President Raisi announced, "We agreed to support the Palestinian cause and the resistance axis and to uphold the rightful rights of the Palestinian people." It is important to remember that Turkey is a NATO member and a close ally of the United States. The fact that Erdogan suddenly became closer to Iran and condemned Netanyahu's war against Gaza as Hitler-like genocide was a clear slap in the face to Washington, the main supporter of the regime. With the outbreak of the war in Gaza and the Israeli regime's desperate attempts to directly involve Iran in a regional war, Iran's complex foreign policy once again came to the forefront. Mr. Ghaffari said Iran was aware all along not to do what the Israeli regime wished.
In the realm of strategy and politics, there is a very important concept known as reading the enemy's map. This means we need to understand what the objective of an actor opposing our country might be. Netanyahu's goal from the outset of the Gaza war was to broaden the scope of the conflict, meaning he aimed to involve the region in a prolonged and ongoing war, possibly lasting several years. Why? Because only in the context of this war did Netanyahu and his coalition cabinet have any chance of survival. One reason we're seeing such fragmentation within Netanyahu's cabinet over the Gaza ceasefire is precisely this issue. However, if this war had become a continuous and widespread phenomenon directly involving Iran, it would have allowed Netanyahu to achieve his goal, namely to directly engage the United States with Iran and leverage this opportunity to inflict deep damage on the resistance groups and countries in the region as part of the project to divide the region. Here, we believe that while Iran responded proportionately to the Zionist regime, it also avoided falling into the strategic trap that Netanyahu and the Zionists laid for Tehran.
Iran has proved again and again that it is not seeking regional hegemony. Rather, based on historical experiences, it views a homegrown regional order as an optimal situation for itself and other countries in the region. Through a policy of good neighborliness, resisting the negative intervention of foreign powers, practical confrontation with Israel, and preventing the outbreak of regional war, the Islamic Republic aims to create peace and stability in the region. In Operations True Promise 1 and 2, Iran demonstrated that as long as it is possible, it will avoid entering into war. However, if the sovereignty of the country is threatened, it will use all its security and military leverage to punish the aggressor. Despite Israel having one of the most protected airspaces in the world, equipped with the most advanced anti-missile technologies, several Iranian missiles successfully struck key Israeli airbases during these operations.
In analyzing international phenomena, we have both a text and a context regarding the occurrence of a certain event. Certainly, if the operations of True Promise 1 and 2 had taken in a context other than the Gaza war, it would have sent a message to the world that Iran is confronting the Zionist regime solely for its own national concerns, without considering the resistance front. More importantly, the initial threat and actions by the Zionist enemy, such as the attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria and subsequent events, were rooted in the context of the Gaza war. Thus, we needed to respond to the Zionists within this frame, and the impact of the two operations was the creation of a state of mutual terror among the Zionists. In Operation True Promise 1, for the first time since the occupation of Palestine, we saw missiles and drones fired from a country flying over Tel Aviv and other occupied territories. In Operation True Promise 2, the scope of the operation expanded, encompassing some of the main air bases of the Zionist regime. Although several months have passed and the military officials of the Zionist regime are still refraining from disclosing the real casualties of these operations, it is certain that they have been advantages for the resistance axis, establishing a balance and equivalence. This means that, on the one hand, these operations strengthened and solidified the balance of power in favor of Hamas and the resistance front, while on the other hand, they initiated the formation of a new equation in the region. This new equation is based on the synergy, coherent functioning of the resistance groups and the Islamic Republic of Iran on the battlefield together.
Following Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, Iran prioritized four main objectives: stopping the war, lifting the blockade and immediately allowing humanitarian aid delivery, sending humanitarian assistance, and countering the forced relocation policies against the people of Gaza. Anything that would divert the international community's focus from the Gaza plight was something the Islamic Republic completely avoided. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Take care.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. ¶¶ IRIB English Radio.
Seven barometric pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You are listening to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. First of all, I would like to congratulate all our dear listeners on this being the 10 days of Fajr. Basically, it is the days from the arrival of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, to his return, to the blessed soil of his homeland, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran as it is now, and to the culmination of all his efforts over the years prior to that particular landing, coming in from France, on that famous picture of Air France into, at that time, if I'm not mistaken, was Mehrabad Airport, which is known today, which is Imam Khomeini International Airport, was not around at that time. And then obviously taking his first steps, going straight to Behesht-e-Zahra, which was the burial place for many of the martyrs of the Islamic Revolution, before obviously the 8-year war. And the martyrs were part of the struggle within Iran against the rule and the tyrannic rule of the Shah. And then obviously the culmination of when the Shah left Iran in that 10-day period. So this particular book is titled, it's a children's book. It's a very nice children's book. It is a picture book for children regarding Ruhullah from birth to exile. So inshallah, in our next segment, we'll speak more about the book, the translator, the publisher, and so on and so forth. So please stay tuned.
Ayatollah Khomeini led his country in an attempt to restore the Islamic vision. This gathering on the anniversary of his death is evidence of the continuing popular support for the Ayatollah's message. The revolution was one of the most significant events of recent Muslim history. It opposed the West and restored Islam to center stage. It gave a lead to the whole Islamic world and made Muslim governments uncomfortable. But many ordinary Muslims everywhere admired the Ayatollah.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. The book that we have introduced to our dear listeners is titled Ruhullah, From Birth to Exile. This book was published by Tarikh o Farhange Publishers, compiled under the supervision of Authors and Producers Council of, I'm assuming, the Intisharat or the publication of the works of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. It was translated by Brother Saeed Madih Khaksar and edited by G.H. Arabi. And this book was first published in the year 2000. It was printed in Iran, and I'm assuming it is published in the city, in the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is Tehran. So this book is a compilation of short stories of the life of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, from the time of his birth, his teenage years, his adolescent years, his seminary years, his years of exile, and then obviously his return back to the Islamic Republic of Iran. There is about 15 or so different stories regarding the life of Imam Khomeini. Again, as I mentioned, so the first one is Welcome Ruhullah, dealing with his birth, then Following the Master, dealing with one of his teachers, reaching the stage of religious leadership, obviously with dealing with his seminary life, being a marja taqlid, or reaching the stage of ijtihad, and that particular honor where he is now the guide for the Shia throughout the world, the 15th of Khordad events, and in the uprisings that happened because of what happened on the 15th of Khordad, his exile to Turkey, his exile to Najaf, and obviously his exile to France, something that should also be mentioned. Obviously, he was not exiled to France, he was going to be exiled to Kuwait. But then because of certain events that occurred, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala decided that he would fly to France and stay there until the coming back, which was in these days that he returned to the Islamic Republic of Iran. So these are some of the events that are mentioned in this book. And it's a series of books, but this is the first one dealing with Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. So please stay tuned for our next segment, where we will be reading one of these stories for the benefit of our dear listeners.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf. For me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim, the book that we have introduced to our dear listeners was titled Ruhullah, From Birth to Exile. It was translated by Brother Saeed Madih Khaksar and edited by G.H. Arabi. So one of the stories in this book, as we mentioned, is a book for children to introduce them to the history of the Islamic Revolution and to the life of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. One of the stories that is here is lunch at school. There was a clamor going on at Agha Mullah Abul Qasim's school. Kids were bustling and playing. The place was filled with joy. Kids circled around Ruhullah. Ruhullah was the youngest student in the school. That day was his turn to treat everyone to lunch. The smell of his food was lingering around. Kids were curiously peeping inside the pot. They wanted to see what kind of food Ruhullah had brought along. When Mullah Abul Qasim arrived, all kids got quiet and rushed to their seats. After Adhan, and the call to prayer, was recited and they had performed their prayers with the motion of Mullah Abul Qasim. Here, motion, I think, is incorrect translation. It should be with the leadership and with the imamate, basically, of Mullah Abul Qasim, or rather the instruction here. Mullah Abul Qasim, they spread the cloth and joyously served and ate the food that was about to get cold. Ruhullah had managed to complete reciting the whole Quran at just the age of 7. So this is one of the stories regarding Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. The next story is titled Following the Master. Ruhullah learned the preliminary and some of the basic lessons with the scholars of Khomeini. Then at the age of 19, he moved to Iraq. In those days, Iraq was one of the main centers for learning theology. And Ayatollah Sheikh Abdul Karim Ha'iri, one of the exalted scholars, taught there. He was actually the head of the house of Iraq at that time. Ruhullah lived in Iraq for 1 year. Then Ayatollah Ha'iri, upon the request of the spiritual leaders of Qom, moved to that city in Nowruz of 1921. He settled there and established Qum's theology center. Agha Ruhullah followed his master to Qum and stayed there. This era coincided with the coup d'etat of Reza Khan in Tehran and the establishment of the Pahlavi regime. Agha Ruhullah learned most of the basic lessons from his great teacher, Ayatollah Ha'iri. When Ayatollah Ha'iri passed away, Ayatollah Murujurdi came to Qum and Agha Ruhullah attended his classes. In this regard, he says, I benefited a lot from Aghai Borujurdi's lessons. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to truly get more acquainted with the life of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, for there are lessons for us in them, inshallah. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. Role of Imam Khomeini's leadership in victory of Islamic revolution. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Today is the start of the days known in Iran as Dahe-e Fajr, 10-day dawn, marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. These days started with February 1st in 1979, but this year it falls on January 31st, since last year was a leap year. Anyway, February 1st was the day in which Imam Khomeini came back home after more than 14 years in exile. The Imam was accorded the greatest welcome in history, as over 10 million people were waiting for his arrival with tears in their eyes and hope in their hearts. Mehrabad Airport of Tehran experienced its most crowded day. February 1st, 1979 was the day of rebirth of Iran. The Islamic Revolution was undoubtedly the greatest and most fateful event, not just in the 20th century, but the several centuries ago, as it changed the equation of all developments in the region and the world. In the first episode of this special series, we are going to embark on the features of Imam Khomeini's leadership, which led to the victory of this unique revolution. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was the most prominent figure of the contemporary history. His spiritual characteristics, especially his unmatched courage and strong willpower, played the most important role in the political, social, and cultural developments of Iran and the world. He managed to attract the hearts and minds of masses from all walks of life to his call. His charisma was originated in his profound faith in God and his highly ethical principles. His words united people from every social class. Unlike many religious leaders who considered religion separate from politics, Imam Khomeini emphasized that religion is blended with politics and these two cannot never be separated. The Imam presented the theory of velayat-e-faqih, rule of jurisprudence. According to the Islamic narrations transmitted from the Prophet and his 12 infallible successors, velayat-e-faqih means the rule of a pious and God-wary jurisprudent who possesses certain lofty characteristics, which entitles him to lead the Islamic Ummah. The Imam simply argued that had it not been for political reasons, none of the prophets would have struggled against the corrupt systems and rulers. His thought was absolutely based on the Quran and the narrations of the prophet and the 12 imams of his Ahlul Bayt. Imam Khomeini believed that Islam is not limited to personal worships, and it is rather a social religion, and it has laws and instructions for every minute section of governance and administration of society and the world. In view of this, he staged his great uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime in Iran, which was a puppet of foreign powers, particularly the United States. People heard Imam Khomeini's call and gathered around him to fight the British-installed and American-backed dictatorial regime. The Imam started his revolution in early 1960s and successfully guided the people to triumph after 15 years. Famous French thinker Michel Foucault described Imam Khomeini with the words, "The personality of Ayatollah Khomeini was like a myth. No head of the state or political leader, even with the support of all the media in his country, can claim that his people enjoy such a personal and a strong bond with him." Imam Khomeini would always stress political, cultural, social, and economic independence. He called on oppressed and downtrodden nations in general, and Muslim nations in particular, to stand up and get united against ungodly rulers, who are stooges of big powers and do not represent their people. His Islamic revolution turned into the symbol of a struggle against the dominance of oppressive and despotic regime. He introduced new words to the terminology of political and social struggles. For instance, he called the big powers and bullying governments as arrogant powers, or simply, the global arrogance. His ideas were totally based on the Quran, yet he concentrated his struggle against the main center of evil, the United States, and correctly called it the Great Satan. The great father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, became the symbol of freedom, justice, and fight against the global arrogance and colonialism. The Imam always put emphasis on people's votes and said that everything should be done with people's votes. So, in less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he invited the people to take part in a referendum to determine the type of the ruling system. Although, if he had just determined the Islamic system for the country, people would all accept it wholeheartedly, as they loved him and knew that he was the representative of the Imam of the age. This was proved with the nationwide turnout of the people and 98.2% of the voters in favor of the Islamic Republic system of government. Imam Khomeini lived a very simple life, and that's why he ruled the souls and hearts of people. Ayatollah Khamenei said on Imam Khomeini, "The dear leader and our great late Imam was a bright figure in the world. Truly, we haven't had like him either in this era or the past eras. Among the famous figures of the world, after the prophets and saints, infallible Imams, we don't know a figure with such greatness, positive, and versatile characteristics. I decisively believe that this great man possessed all those positive characteristics, such as knowledge, determination, intelligence, courage, and willpower. But if he had not sincerity and bond with God and disavowal of polytheism, it would have not achieved such successes. These great successes were achieved at a time when every sign indicated the isolation, oldness, and exhaustion of religion and flourishing of material thoughts, morals, and methods, and the rule of devilish and human desires. His great feat was that, in this world, which was overwhelmed with an ocean of mud and people were ashamed of uttering the name of religion and divine values, he raised the divine values, glorified them, and hoisted his flag in the world. What he did cannot be compared except with the work of the prophets. Even no work of the great reformers is comparable with it.